Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Ion Travel with Peter Greenberg, that's me, ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Hello, snack lovers. Curb your cravings with My Mochi ice cream. Imagine a scoop of rich, creamy, premium ice cream in your favorite flavor. Now imagine that scoop wrapped up in the sweetest, softest dough known to mankind. That's My Mochi ice cream. Sweet, chewy, cool, and creamy, all in one bite. It's quite possibly the most joyfully chill sensation you've ever had in your life. My Mochi ice cream comes in tons of fabulous flavors, like strawberry, mango, cookies and cream, and double chocolate. Each box of My Mochi ice cream has 6 perfectly portioned mochis that are about 80 calories each, and it's also gluten-free. You can find My Mochi at Target or visit MyMochi.com to find a grocery store near you. That's MyMochi.com. Discover the joyfully chill sensation of My Mochi ice cream today.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. FedEx offers fast delivery, more visibility, simple returns, and weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. population on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. With FedEx, you get picture proof of delivery, ensuring you always know where your package is. Returns are simple with packageless and paperless returns. Plus, FedEx Ground is also faster to more locations than UPS Ground. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. So, what are you waiting for? See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively, FedEx.
It's harder to focus than ever these days. Thankfully, C4 has reinvented the energy drink game with C4 Smart Energy, the only energy drink clinically proven to provide enhanced mental focus, containing 200 milligrams of natural caffeine, a blend of vitamins and zero sugar. It was formulated to support your well-being and help you feel your best, all while enhancing mental focus. From your brain to your body, C4 Smart Energy does it all and tastes amazing. Look for Smart Energy in the beverage aisle at your local Kroger, Albertsons, and Safeway grocery stores. C4 Smart Energy. Stay focused.
Graduation is a sweet occasion, but finding the perfect gift can be a bitter struggle. MMS.com has a solution. Personalized M&Ms. Just imagine the look on your grad's face when they receive a custom candy creation featuring their school's colors, name, and even their photo printed right on some M&Ms. It's a thoughtful way to celebrate their accomplishments and make the occasion even more special. Visit MMS.com to create your own personalized gifts and party favors for graduations, weddings, birthdays, and more. That's MMS.com. Use code WONDERY to receive 15% off your next order.
It's time for Peter Greenberg Worldwide with America's number one travel news journalist. And now the man who travels over 400,000 miles each year, the travel detective, Peter Greenberg.
Welcome to another edition of Eye on Travel. I'm Peter Greenberg, and on this podcast, we come to you from my makeshift quarantine studio in my locked-down New York apartment. It'll feature two special COVID-19 conversations with Marriott CEO Arne Sorensen on how the giant hotelier is doing and the road ahead, and with the legendary Robert Crandall, the former CEO of American Airlines.
The coronavirus has upended one of the largest industries in the world, travel and tourism. And just recently, the latest unemployment figures are 6.6 million, doubling the ones that were filed last week. Nearly 10 million people filing for unemployment, 75 million jobs at risk internationally, globally in the travel and tourism industry. And I thought it would be a good idea, in fact, an imperative idea, to talk to the major players in this industry to talk about how we adjust and how we move forward. How do we just cope with this unprecedented event? Joining me now, the president and CEO of Marriott, the legendary, I can say legendary, Arne Sorensen. How are you, sir?
I'm good, Peter. How about you? Nice to see you.
And nice to see you. You know, you had a very heartfelt video that you released to your team members and your staff a couple of days ago. And in that video, you said in the 92-year history of the corporation, you had never seen, never experienced a situation like this. The devastation was worse, as you said, than 9/11 and the recession of 2008-2009 combined. And those numbers are still getting worse.
Well, it is still breathtaking, even though we've sort of had it weeks, maybe months to absorb this. Obviously, if you start with what happened in China in late January, you see by early February, business down in that market 90%. It's, of course, about a month later where it starts to move to the rest of the world. And we start to confront the gravity of the situation. But even now, weeks after that, every day is literally breathtaking because the impact to the business, the impact to the travel industry is unimaginable in normal circumstances.
I mean, here you are, the corporation of 30 different brands, more than 7,000 properties in 131 countries around the world. And this is probably the first time you've ever been confronted with having to basically close so many of them and furlough so many employees.
Yeah. I mean, just as a reminder, that the worst prior quarter I ever experienced, and I believe it was the worst in the travel industry, although my history is only 25 years, not longer than that, was the fourth quarter. 2001. We had both the tech bubble burst, so we had a recession already underway. And then, of course, we had the horrific events of 9/11. That final quarter of 2001 was minus 25% top line revenue. We're now running about minus 80-85% globally, all around the world.
So if you're running minus 85%, it's essentially a market that's collapsed.
It is, and it's no wonder, right? I mean, we have governments all around the world that are telling us with reason, we want you to stay home. We want you not to interact with other people. Keep social distance. It's the phrase that's used over and over again. And of course, traveling to a hotel is not very consistent with that government advice.
Right. And when you're in 131 countries, that's a big deal.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. I think obviously there are some positive signs. I try and give myself positive signs. If you let me share one with you every now and then. China, we are starting to see some recovery. We're seeing people get back to work, factories reopen, and we're seeing occupancies beginning to build. So there is hope, I suppose, in the China story that the virus spread can be tampered or stopped, and people can then get back to normal. I think the other point, which is interesting, is there are a number of places around the world where hotels are being used to take care of healthcare workers, as an example. Near hospitals, both in the United States and Europe and in other markets around the world, where healthcare workers are worried about bringing the virus home to their loved ones. And so think that if we can stay someplace nearby, they're not diagnosed with the virus, but nevertheless, they want to be extra cautious. And so there's some uses like that which are underway, but the normal travel rhythms have been entirely upended.
Well, speaking of the rhythm, it doesn't, operate in a vacuum. Airlines are either not operating at all. They park their planes all over the world, operating on ridiculously small schedules. The load factor here today for Delta Airlines out of LaGuardia is 13%. That's not sustainable.
That's right. Yeah, it's not sustainable. And of course, we have in the phase three legislation that was passed by the U.S. government last week, signed by the president, I believe, late last week. We have the biggest economic stimulus bill of all time, and of course, significant dollars earmarked for the airline industry. Of course, they're lining up to get those arrangements finalized, given that the legislation has been done.
Right, but the biggest problem, of course, is to put this in perspective. Back in 2008-2009, the most number of unemployment claims ever filed, 665,000. We're now at about 10.1 million.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And it is the other thing that was in that stimulus package, which I thought was so very powerful, is political leadership in the United States. And this has been done in Europe in a number of countries, the UK, Germany, as two quick examples. They have basically said, we're going to provide enough resources to make sure that folks are protected during what hopefully amounts only to a few months of loss of work, right? And there might be a furlough, word we use at Marriott, of course, because we very much expect and hope that we can bring our people back quickly. But the unemployment insurance regime is been buttressed significantly. The benefits are better. The availability is much quicker. And we're hopeful, it's a bit of an experiment, of course, but we're hopeful that with tools like this, we'll be able to bring people back quickly to work, and the disruption to their lives will not be as nearly profound as it would have been otherwise.
Of course, in travel and tourism, you've got to connect all the dots. It's not just hotels, airlines, and cruise lines. It's retail, it's restaurants, it's tour guides, it's bus drivers, Uber and Lyft guys. And the concern that I'm hearing on the street is that even with this $2.2 trillion stimulus plan, I call it a recovery plan. I'm waiting for the stimulus, but yeah. but if you're actually going to call it that kind of a plan, it may already be oversubscribed.
Well, there's already debate about whether there needs to be a phase four plan, and there's conversations on Capitol Hill about what would be in the phase four plan. I think there are a number of reasonable voices that say, well, wait a second, the phase three money hasn't even gotten out the door yet, so we should sort of see what happens. I think that's an interesting debate. I think the more fundamental debate, of course, is an even harder one to answer, and that is, what happens with the spread of the virus? And are we able as societies in the United States and in other markets all around the world to say within the next month or so, maybe 6 weeks or so, oh, it looks like we have changed the arc of the spread of this virus. And now we can start tiptoeing back out of our homes and back into normal life.
You know, when we last left off, we were talking about, you know, when do we come back here? But let's go back to some of the nuts and bolts here. At one point, Marriott, a month ago, you guys were enjoying unprecedented growth. I remember talking to you last year. You were opening up one new hotel every 14 hours, right? Yeah. It's unimaginable, but you were. Obviously, that work has slowed down, if not stopped for the moment. But when you take a look at the business model of Marriott itself, you don't have that much equity in the hotels that you manage in terms of the total number of hotels. So I'm looking at the effects down the line here with not just your company, but the people who own that real estate, the people who own those buildings, who do they go to for help?
Right. Yeah, that's a fair point. And of course, something our hotel guests don't understand all that well, but the 7,000 or so hotels in our system, we think represent $350 to $400 billion of real estate. And Marriott, of course, a big, substantial company, but not big enough to own real estate of that magnitude. So every hotel we have is owned by a separate real estate investor, sometimes operated by them, sometimes operated by us for their account. But each one of those is sort of its own business. And, of course, they've got to be able to navigate through this tough environment just the way we try and navigate through this tough environment. It varies all around the world based on who these owners are. Sometimes they are public companies, sometimes they're family, sometimes they're government-owned enterprises. And of course, each of them will have a bit of their own sets of challenges as they go through it. In the U.S., the Phase 3 stimulus bill does include provisions both under the Small Business Administration and under the so-called larger company support that will be available to companies like that to either service mortgages that they've got, maybe service payroll, maybe service lease payments that they've got to do. All of that, of course, is being set up now, but we were engaged in conversations on the Hill to try and make sure that the stimulus provisions were available to precisely companies like that.
It's interesting because under the stimulus package, there's a provision there in the SBA loans for those brick and mortar travel agencies and for the guys who own the buildings. It's only $350 billion. But what's interesting is I've been talking to the banks, and what they're telling me is they're overwhelmed now with applications. I mean, overwhelmed. And they're worried that will be oversubscribed.
Yeah, no, that's right. I mean, you've got, even before the legislation passed last week, you've got many, many companies, private and public, that are going to their banks and basically saying, we've seen our revenue take a dramatic hit, maybe disappear, maybe just be meaningfully weaker, and we need to rethink what kind of financial resources we have to ride through this weak environment. Now, at the same time, you've got, interestingly, some companies which are on the other side of this. If you're selling grocery, if you're delivering meals to somebody's homes, if you're a provider of technology sometimes, like the technology we're using now to do something that we would have done in a different way a month ago, all of those companies are hiring and looking at sort of the other side of this where demand has dramatically increased. But this is the time when the financial community has got to step up and help those who need incremental liquidity to get through the number of months that it takes to get back towards real life.
I know it's early to ask this question, but I got to ask it anyway because we're all sitting at home. We have time to think. Have you given some thought to the fundamental changes that may be awaiting for us as to how we travel, where we travel, where we stay?
Well, Peter, you share my love for travel, and I'll confess to being anything but unbiased in this. I think there have been trends that have been underway for decades. You've documented and done great journalism on many of them. But I think those trends include the fact that we love adventure. We love to see the world. We love to be exposed to new foods and new places and places that we've only read about. And I, for one, cannot believe that the coronavirus is going to upset those trends. Now, if you look at business travel or if you look at the meeting space, we're obviously all experimenting with new tools, new technology tools. Well, I shouldn't say new tools, because for 20 years at least, people have been saying every time we got into a recession, well, teleconferencing is finally going to take off.
They're never
going to get back to...
And it never works.
Sometimes I'm sort of glad when it doesn't work. But I think there is still something about getting together with people in person, having a chance to break bread together, having a chance to see expressions live, having a chance to take the unpredictable side of more hours together than you would ever have by teleconferencing. And I suspect even that will come back, but people will need to know that it's safe. And I think that obviously is something we can't control, but depends on experts in the healthcare space. It may depend on a vaccine ultimately being available that will finally comfort people that it's okay to get out and get about.
You know, you bring up an interesting point going back to 9/11. If you take a look at American travel habits immediately following that, nobody wanted to fly over a long distance or large bodies of water because they were worried of terrorism. Today, the subtext, they're afraid of flying long distances so that if somebody coughs, they'll get quarantined and won't be able to get home for weeks.
Yeah, that's right. And obviously, we've read a lot about the negative air pressure in planes and the tools around disinfecting planes and the rest are getting dramatically better. I actually think the airplanes probably are a fairly safe place to be. But still, you know.
Well, they're a very safe place to be today because there's nobody sitting next to you.
Get through the distancing phase of this, and I think ultimately get to a place where people are comfortable that they can get back up.
Well, let's talk about social distancing, because what we took for granted a month and a half ago is now a big question mark, right? Can we go back to a concert? Can we go to a sporting event? Can we go to a convention and a meeting? Can we go to a corporate retreat? What will the protocols and behaviors allow us to do in an environment that was designed for groups and designed for large meetings?
Yeah. Well, I think, again, we'll take it a step at a time. I think the first step will be individual or family travel or small restaurants or, places where you're not intimidated maybe by the size of the crowd. And that already, again, using China as the sort of current positive example, we're seeing business to restaurants come back up. We're seeing traffic come back up. We're starting to see domestic air travel come back up. But it's mostly, well, it's virtually 100% actually China demand at this point. It's not international demand, long-haul flights and the like. I suspect that will come a little bit later. And for even there, first, it'll be, does Peter Greenberg get back on a plane to go to Asia? That will happen before the big convention happens because there are different risks associated with that. But again, that's all going to come back when we start to feel like it's safe. And that will be driven by healthcare. It'll be driven by government policy. It'll be driven by the statistics we see out there about the spread of the virus.
You know, I asked my audience to send me emails with any of their questions, and I was overwhelmed and inundated by two areas, one, both of which will probably not surprise you. One is, Mrs. Johnson booked a trip on an airline with a hotel, with a package or a cruise, and obviously it was canceled and wants to get a refund and can't get one. And they're going crazy.
Right.
I'm sure you hear that every day.
Oh, we do. Yeah, we do, absolutely. And we have, in the first instance, we first provided cancellation even for prepaid rooms. We basically said we'll still provide cancellation if you're in January going in or out of China, right? Because that was the epicenter of this. I think we got to a place where we said you can change any reservation for any time, even if prepaid, by April 30, and that will be done without cancellation fees. And of course, we'll probably move that by another month or two, something like that. We'll have to see how this goes.
And the R word, the refund?
Well, the refund comes with it. Absolutely. So that's available to folks. Now, you get to reservations made for late in 2020 or even in early 2021. And, you know, for not surprisingly, we would say, well, let's wait a bit and see what happens, because we're optimistic that we'll be back to a normal time. And we'd like to sort of encourage people to continue to plan for the future. Bookings that are being done for that far out in the future. But people are a little wary and a little bit less certain than obviously.
What extraordinary times we are living in the world of travel. The entire world has essentially been upended when it comes to one of the largest industries in the world and the largest services industry in the world. Joining me now, a legend in the travel industry. I hope he allows me to call him that. We've been friends for many, many years. We've worked together on so many different stories together. He's the former president and CEO of American Airlines, the legendary, I said it twice, Bob Crandall. How are you, sir?
I'm well, Peter. And how are you?
I'm okay. We're all sitting here watching, or I should say, sailing or flying in uncharted waters or uncharted airspace as the world of travel is essentially ground to a halt.
Yes, it certainly has, Peter. It's the most extraordinary thing, really, that any of us have ever seen, and I suspect the most extraordinary thing we will ever see, sort of the modern version of the bubonic plague.
Exactly. And to think that a month ago, everything was essentially normal, and then all of a sudden, in a very short span of time, every airline in the world operating international flights essentially ground to a halt. Every other airline has parked the majority of its fleet, if not its entire fleet. Some airlines will not come back at all. Hotels are closing buildings on almost an hourly basis. We see cruise ships that are just parked, or in some cases, believe it or not, still drifting out, unable to dock. And then all the ancillary businesses, whether it's retail, restaurants, cars, dry cleaners, everything that might be associated in the world of travel and tourism is essentially on hold and for the foreseeable future.
That's right, Peter. And this whole thing has very profound implications, obviously, for not only for the travel business, but for virtually every business on the planet. I mean, 140 million, I guess, certainly a million four or more, 10 million people in Bangladesh. I was just reading an article about the fact that all of them are out of work and all the factories where they work are in the midst of bankruptcy proceedings, all because of the fact that the world is shut down. And of course, those people have nowhere to run, and lots of people here in the travel industry have nowhere to run either. It's just stopped.
You know, when you take a look at the number of countries in the world and how many of them, which by the way is a majority of them, are completely dependent on travel and tourism for their foreign exchange, talk about literally, we're not just coming up with a figurative thing here, but they literally cannot put food on the table. In Hawaii, for example, resort closed, no air service in. So many of their employees in the hotel and hospitality business are holding down two and three jobs. They can't go anywhere. They have no plan B. We take a look at Las Vegas. I mean, imagine every resort, casino, hotel, and on the strip and throughout the city and throughout the state now shuttered. And those are just two examples in this country. You mentioned Bangladesh, but you go to Kenya or Tanzania or Egypt, countries that are totally dependent on travel and tourism. Their airlines are basically parking planes that might not come back at all.
Now, all true, Peter. I mean, it's hard to, you simply cannot overstate the importance of it or its dimensions. It is a catastrophe in every sense of the word.
Now, given all of your history and experience, Bob, when you've gone through somewhat, I'll qualify this, somewhat similar disruptions in the past, there was always a sort of a way out that didn't take 4 years. There was sort of a way out, whether it was discounting or whether it was, you know, stimulating the environment with flyer program, something where you could look and say, okay, tough point now, but we can see the light at the end of the tunnel. Is there a light at the end of the tunnel right now?
No, I don't think so, Peter. I think, you can describe this any way you want it to describe it, but it is, as I said a moment ago, this is a full-fledged catastrophe, from which there isn't going to be any immediate, snapback. And that is, That is because of the fact that the central reality, the central point, is that people no longer trust each other. And it isn't that they actively distrust the other person. They simply do not know, and they have no way to know, whether the person with whom they might come into contact is a carrier, whether they are symptomatic or asymptomatic. And until we recover that, until we get back to the point where we have testing that can establish most of a given area, most of a given activity is safe, those activities aren't going to come back. We really have got a situation here where I think we are paying a terrible price for the incompetence of our long-term planners. It's a political statement, but it isn't a political statement. It's not just Donald Trump. It's George Bush and Obama and Trump all rolled into one. The U.S. government has published its most recent study. They published in October of 2019, and they wrote, do not disclose on it, and put it in the bottom drawer. And the U.S. government has been very much aware of this kind of threat for a long time, not been willing to do anything about it, and now we are paying the price. Look, Bill Gates, you've seen Bill Gates on TV a lot recently.
Yeah.
Bill Gates has been giving public talks about this for many years. So the problem is, we have a catastrophe, but it is a catastrophe that in a very real sense is self-induced, because we refuse to believe that government has an essential role to play in modern life. Private enterprise cannot predict and cannot deal with catastrophes that impact the common good. We have to empower government to do that. And once we get through this, I sincerely hope we will take a far less jaundiced view of the role of government.
I mean, isn't it ironic, Bob, that just about a month and a half ago, our focus was on a national political campaign, global warming, climate change, and over-tourism. Well, guess what? There's no over-tourism right now. And the political campaign, I forgot we were even having one right now. And now the focus really is, can we get through the next 6 weeks?
Well, that's right. But we will get through the next 6 weeks, because there's no alternative. But of course, the greater problem is, what do we have to do to return our economy to a sense of vigor? And I'm afraid that requires a great deal of careful planning and a lot of careful activity that, for the most part, we as a people have been unwilling to engage in. We just haven't been willing to do the planning. We haven't been willing to pay the price in either dollars or preparation that would have been required to modify this event.
Well, I'm not going to put you back in the chairman role at American, but I'm going to give you a hypothetical. Here you are running Airline A, whatever Airline A is right now. Do you have any idea, or I should say, do you have any ideas as to what your first steps are going to be in short term, and then any kind of long term planning to navigate essentially these uncharted waters?
Well, the first thing I'm going to do, Peter, is I'm going to sit down and I'm going to make a very, very careful and very conservative financial projection. In the short term, of course, I'm going to keep everybody on the payroll. And I'm going to do that because of the recently passed legislation that makes it financially feasible for me to do that. And I might say in passing, I think France has the right idea. If you're going to hand out money, I think the best way to hand out money is to simply give it to companies and tell them to keep everybody employed. And the reason for that is, you take an airline, for example. An airline is a very complicated machine. And if you take the machine apart and suddenly there's a burst of demand, you can't put the machine back together again unless you've got the people. So I'd keep everybody employed, and I would make a very, very careful financial projection so that I could say to the government, look, here is what is needed to allow me to mothball my fleet and keep all my people working for the 14-month period that I estimate will elapse before we are back to previous levels of demand. And people are going to look at me and they're going to say, wow, that is a big number.
Bob, the airfare today from Miami to Los Angeles, round trip, you're going to go nuts when you hear this. The round trip airfare from Miami to Los Angeles today on American Airlines is $40.
Yeah, well, with all due respect, and let's not talk about just American. I was told this morning that I can fly round trip from West Palm Beach to New York on another carrier for $18. I think the airlines are making a big mistake, Peter. The issue isn't price. If I needed to go to New York, I'd be perfectly happy to pay a normal price to go to New York. And even if you said to me, I'm going to take you to New York for a buck, I'm not going to go because I don't want to die, Peter.
Exactly.
You see, the point is, I think it's kind of silly to operate airplanes to offer seats for $40 when the out-of-pocket cost of operating that seat is way more than $40. You're better off to park the airplane. And yep. So I think the airlines ought to recognize that the particular problem now isn't price. The problem now is public trust. And until we get public trust back, which the airlines can do something to help, but they can't do a lot. The government really has to reestablish public trust by getting control of the virus, by getting a cure for the virus, by developing a vaccine to prevent the virus, and then by providing testing mechanisms so that people can know that the place that they're going to go to and the people they're going to go with are safe. And when all of that happens, demand will reassert itself. We're going to have to get back to the economy so people have some money to spend. And then once they've got money to spend, they need to be able to trust one another and the vendors that they're buying from in order to go back to travel. They want to travel, but they're not going to travel until they feel safe.
They want their security blanket.
Well, it's not a security blanket, Peter. It's real security. Look, I'm fortunate. I'm 85 years old. They tell me that if I get this thing, I'm probably going to die. So I don't want to get it.
So for a man who's an airline guy, you're staying home.
Well, you got it. But it's all about self-preservation, Peter.
I'm with you. But what you're also saying, Bob, is that from a traditional standpoint, this is not a situation where the airlines can discount their way out of this.
No, they can't. They can. This really doesn't have anything to do with discounting. This has to do with public trust and the airlines, along with everybody else in the United States. All the rest of us all have a role to play. The airlines, because they are major employers, have an opportunity working with the government to keep their people employed, to keep the sinews of the organization stitched together so that when we get through this, they can turn the machine back on. And everybody else that's part of the public has a responsibility to stay home until such time as we have testing and a cure and a vaccine.
Sure. Well, so much of airline travel we took for granted. So much of travel in general we took for granted. We thought nothing of hopping on a plane and going to a major sporting event or a concert or to see friends and relatives or for business that, you know, we just wanted to have eye contact with the person we were doing business with. Today, we're no longer shaking hands. We're practicing social distancing. And I'm wondering what your thoughts are as to when we do come back and we do get that trust restored, how that's going to change the way we travel anyway and where we go to.
Well, Peter, I think this is going to teach us all some lessons. My guess is that a lot of what we learned during this period of time will stick with us. My guess, for example, is that some modest percentage of business travel won't return. The use of electronic communications is so much more widespread, and a lot more people know about it. So some of what we used to go do in person, we will do electronically. I think likewise, until such time as we have a real cure for this particular disease, we're all going to be a lot more careful about washing our hands. I think we might very well stick with the elbow bump as opposed to shaking hands. We're certainly going to set higher standards for the cleanliness of the places where we are, whether they're retail, whether they're retail outlets or sporting venues. And I think with particular respect to travel, I think both the airline industry and the hotels that operate in such close conjunction with them are going to be held to a very, very much higher standard of cleanliness than has been true in the past.
Yeah, and some of the airlines have already announced, you know, a whole new protocol of cleaning that they're going to say is not only improved, but will maintain itself from here on in. They're not just doing it for now.
No, I think that's right. I think that there will be some long-term changes.
Hey, when we come back, I want to get you for one more segment, because you're the guy who I credit with starting the original frequent flyer program back in, I hate to say it, 1981.
Yes, I did do that.
Yes, you did. I've been a member since day one, Bob. My membership number starts with a zero. That's how scary that is.
That's good.
I know. But, you know, we've all become addicted to the mileage programs, not just with your former airline, but with every other airline. I always ask everybody if they're a member of a frequent flyer program, and they say yes. And I say, how many members are more than one? And all the hands still go up. So I guess the question is, if somebody's listening to this show who's had difficulty, you know, cashing in their miles because of capacity and because of, you know, popularity of certain destinations, I would suspect that within the next 3 months, as things start to open up, it would be a brilliant time to redeem those miles.
Well, I guess that's right, Peter. I think, of course, the airlines have grounded very, very large percentages of their capacity. So they're not going to be flying around just for the purpose of allowing people to cash in frequent flyer miles. On the other hand, as the industry begins to put capacity back in the air, I would guess that for the next year or so, load factors will be less, won't be as high as they have been in recent times. And there might very well be an opportunity for people to use some of their accumulated miles, which would be a good thing for the airlines, because the more the public hears from their friends and neighbors about what a wonderful free, quote unquote, trip they had to Hawaii or San Francisco or New York or wherever, the more they hear about that, the more they're going to say to themselves, well, maybe we should do that too. Let's get the kids and let's go. I feel better. I feel better now about the coronavirus. I think probably American or United or Delta, whoever it is doing a great job of keeping the airplanes clean. While there are still seats available, let's go. And by the way, dear, next time you buy something, be sure you get miles, because I want to replace the miles we're about to use.
That's right. We're all still mileage junkies. I admit it. And I don't regret it. At the same time, a lot of airlines right now are using this terrible crisis to say goodbye to older aircraft, right? They're American has parked 757s, United's parked 767s, Delta is probably going to park the old MD-88 overseas, Emirates is retiring, not Emirates, but Lufthansa and Air France and Singapore, among other carriers, are doing early retirements of a relatively young airplane, the A380.
Well, of course, that's right, Peter. But once again, this is a matter that you put together a spreadsheet and you say to yourself, look, what is this airplane costing me? What's its scrap value? What does it cost me to maintain it if I continue to use it? What are the net cash flows? How many seats can I sell at what price, et cetera? And out of some of those exercises, you reach the conclusion that given the fact that demand will be a lot less robust for the next couple of years, I suspect, than it was in the year preceding, than it was in 2018-2019, they're going to reach some conclusions, as you say, about the wisdom of retiring some of their older airplanes and shrinking the size of the total fleet.
Exactly. In fact, I left out that KLM flew their last 747 this week. Qantas flew their last 747 this week, and the average age of the A380s that they're retiring early is only about 8 years. That's astounding.
Now that really is surprising, Peter. But of course, the A380 had a unique set of challenges, and its usability, its usefulness, has been tremendously diminished by the availability of smaller but very long range airplanes, which of course allows the public to buy nonstop transportation a lot more often than they could in the past, and nonstop is what the public prefers.
Exactly. And in fact, if you take the Emirates model, they have over 100 airplanes that are A380s. They have so many airplanes that they're actually using one of their flights from Dubai to Oman on an A380. That's a 40-minute flight, Bob.
Yeah, I know. Well, JAL did that with 747s between two very close together cities. Now, some years ago. So, you know, if you get enough density, it makes sense.
I guess so, but that wasn't what the plane was designed for, right?
No, it is not what the plane was designed for. But, you know, what you do, you do what you need to do.
Hey, thanks for joining me on Eye on Travel. In the meantime, be sure to head over to petergreenberg.com for the latest travel news on COVID-19. And I'll also be answering all your emails. I'll be back next week with another Eye on Travel podcast. Stay safe, stay healthy, and stay sane.
You've been listening to Peter Greenberg Worldwide. Catch us each week as we broadcast from a new location somewhere around the world.
Hey, Prime members, Peter Greenberg here. You can listen to Eye on Travel ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today, and you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. And before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at Wondery.com.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Are you ready for an all-new season of Survivor? You better be, because Survivor 46 is here, and it's 90 minutes of twists and turns you don't want to miss. Better yet, after each episode, there's a brand new episode of On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast. Each week, we go behind the scenes of the episode's biggest moments, taking you into the how and the why things happened. And this season, we're very lucky to be joined by an expert, the winner of Survivor 45, D. Valladares.
What is up? I'm thrilled to be joining this team and to be giving you my take on how and the why players made the moves they did, what it takes to outwit, outplay, and outlast, and to ask Jeff some questions, because even after 26 days out there, there is still a lot for me to uncover.
Bring it, D. Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.